Hi, I'm Carl the Zeus. We're happy to see you this Monday, and we hope you had a great weekend. For the United States, it was a weekend of remembrance. On the 20th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks, which we covered in depth on Friday's show, ceremonies, prayer services, tributes, moments of silence, events like these were held all across the country. Relatives of 9/11 victims reflected on their loved ones. Survivors shared their stories of the harrowing day. Communities displayed flags in honor of the lives lost. It was a national observance of a tragedy that changed the country. And like the attacks themselves, it brought together Americans from all walks of life.
At dawn, the unfurling of a flag over the side of the Pentagon hit by a jetliner 20 years ago signaled the beginning of a day of tributes. It's one of three sites where Americans gathered in somber remembrance, honoring each one of the 2,977 people killed in the terrorist attacks on September 11th. At the footprints where the Twin Towers proudly stood over Lower Manhattan, President Biden and the First Lady were joined by the Obamas and a sea of 9/11 families to memorialize those lost two decades ago. At 8:46 a.m., the first of six moments of silence, marking the instant the first hijacked airliner struck the North Tower. Mike Lowe's daughter, Sarah, was a flight attendant on that plane.
As we recite the names of those we lost, my memory goes back to that terrible day when it felt like an evil specter had descended on our world. But it was also a time when many people acted above and beyond the ordinary.
The tributes continued throughout the morning, with the nation pausing five more times. The moment each Twin Tower fell, when the Pentagon was attacked, and the moment United Flight 93 crashed into a field in Pennsylvania.
It is truly an honor to be with all of you at this field of honor.
Along with Vice President Kamala Harris, President George W. Bush, who served as Commander-in-Chief in 2001, helped lead a memorial at that site.
The 33 passengers and seven crew of Flight 93 could have been any group of citizens selected by fate. In a sense, they stood in for us all. The terrorists soon discovered that a random group of Americans is an exceptional group of people.
And at the Pentagon, General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, honored the victims of the attacks and the service members who died in the subsequent war in Afghanistan.
Never forget those who were murdered by terrorists. Never forget those who rushed to save their lives and gave theirs in exchange. Never forget the sons and the daughters, the brothers and sisters and the mothers and fathers who gave their tomorrows for our todays.
The sky over Lower Manhattan lights up again with the annual Tribute in Light. It's a reminder of the nation's resilience and an iconic symbol honoring those killed and the nation's unbreakable spirit. Polo Sandoval, CNN, New York.
10-second trivia. Who conducted the first spacewalk, which took place in 1965? Alan Shepard, Yuri Gagarin, Ed White, or Alexei Leonov? While Ed White was the first American to do it, the first ever spacewalk was made by Soviet cosmonaut Alexei Leonov. According to Space.com, Leonov originally thought he'd be a professional artist, but his success in the Soviet Air Force led to his selection for cosmonaut training, and when he first stepped outside in space on March 18, 1965, his government was supportive, his family was not. His father yelled at what he thought was Leonov's misbehavior and said he should be punished, and his daughter cried and said, "Please tell Daddy to get back inside." Leonov said he faced a number of life-threatening challenges doing that, but he did get back to Earth safely. Less than 3 months later, astronaut Ed White made America's first spacewalk, and 4 years after that, the space race between the U.S. and the Soviet Union culminated in the American moon landing. International space programs have come a long way since the 1960s, but spacewalks are still considered risky, even though NASA says they've been a crucial part of the construction and maintenance of the International Space Station, the most expensive object people have ever built. As an example of that maintenance, two astronauts, one from Europe and one from Japan, took a walk outside the ISS on Sunday. Both have completed several spacewalks before. Their mission this time around was to set up support equipment for a new solar power unit, which will be installed on a future space trip. If you've ever wondered what it's like to work outside when outside means orbiting the Earth, here's your answer.
That goes in the spacecraft.
The airlock hatch came open. Immediately inside the airlock itself, it was bathed in this beautiful color of blue. There was a light reflecting off the ocean below. And I saw the planet Earth and just my feet just dangling there. And I thought to myself, you know, this is absolutely beautiful. I can't believe that I'm here. And then I said, okay, we got work to do.
Okay, and then at this point, under full, we'll just have you go towards your feet between the modules. And Danny, once you have that fuse tether in place, before you BRT to the handrail,
the process associated with actually going out the door begins months beforehand. Understanding the choreography of what's going to take place over an 8-hour period, what are the technical challenges for that particular activity? You are your own self-contained vessel. You have your own oxygen system, your own power supply, your own communication system. You have, obviously, all the tools that you brought with you. You have the ability to reject the heat that you're building up as you're working inside the spacesuit. So you have to kind of manage all that as your own little independent spacecraft out there. And because we can rely heavily on our training, that allows us to not be overwhelmed with the things that you just can't emulate here on the ground. At the end of our first spacewalk, I stopped on the truss just for a second, and it was nighttime, and I looked down below, and I knew exactly where I was. I was over the Indian Ocean, because I could see the lights along the coastline. It's just such an incredible feeling to just be able to see that, to take that in, and kind of be able to be in that moment.
Not ready to come back down to Earth just yet. We're having a look at a new type of hot air balloon that would take well-paying customers to the edge of space, or at least higher than 99% of the Earth's atmosphere. If Space Perspective flights get off the ground as planned in 2024, they'll rise 100,000 feet above our planet's surface. Technically, space is defined as starting quite a bit higher than that, but the balloon flight would still allow passengers to see the darkness of space. It would be a relatively relaxing rise for as many as 8 people at a time. Flights would last 6 hours, and there will be a bathroom on board. If you want to get on board, the company is selling tickets in advance, but they're $125,000 each. Which would leave a lot of space in your wallet, if you know what I'm saying. But if you need a lift, you have a ballooning budget, and you don't mind being accused of looking down on people, this could put your head well above the clouds for a flight of fancy that defies and then depends on gravity. Dianza High School, we see you watching from Richmond, California. Thank you for subscribing and leaving a comment on our YouTube channel. And of course, that is the only way to get a school mentioned on CNN 10. I'm Carl Azus, and I'm grateful to have you watching.